Those of us at Fresh Air had become great admirers of Elizabeth Neufer. She'd been our guest three times in the past few months, talking about her reporting from Iran and Iraq, and her earlier work covering Bosnia and Rwanda, which was the subject of her book, The Key to My Neighbor's House. She had also covered the first Gulf War and the war on terrorism in Afghanistan. Our first interview was recorded last December. She had just completed boot camp for journalists, reporting from war zones. She was preparing to go to Iraq. I asked her about the possibility of being exposed to weapons of mass destruction. I wanted to know if she found that prospect terrifying.
I'm always terrified when I go into a war zone. I mean, people sometimes think I'm a glutton for punishment, but I do always find that the stories of the people who will be there, the citizens, and who are in fact unprepared for these kinds of disasters, are always just extraordinarily compelling. They're usually worth the risk.
Now, we were talking about how one of the role-playing things you did during this boot camp for journalists entering war zones is that you were abducted in a role-playing scenario.
Right.
Have you ever been abducted in real life while covering a war?
I was hijacked, I guess would be the way to put it. I had an incident occur in Bosnia. Imagine it's the height of the war. There's intense shelling. It's dark at night. A colleague and I are up on Mount Igman. We can watch the city being bombed below, and we're attempting to drive out. We're driving a heavily armored car. The road is slippery. It's rainy. It's a dirt track. Our car slips in the mud and basically falls into a ditch. We climb out. It's an exceedingly heavy car, and we can't get it out of the ditch. Unfortunately, the people we flag down are extraordinarily drunk soldiers. And they proceed to sort of take the car battery to try to harass us. They surround my colleague with guns. One of them starts pawing me rather intensely, and it becomes pretty clear at a certain point that rape can be a real option. It was a rather nasty experience and kind of a horrible realization at the time.
How did you get through to the other end on that one?
Well, just sort of one of those moments of insight that in fact what these guys probably were more interested in was the car than they were me. So I spoke a little bit of Bosnian. I kept talking to them again. I kept trying to humanize myself. I kept saying, hi, I'm a journalist. This man is my husband. He wasn't, but he was convenient for the time. And, here's our car. Can you help us fix it? Eventually handed the car keys over. And they got very distracted with the idea of getting this car out of the ditch. And once they took their hands off me, we grabbed the satellite telephone and ran and found our way to a UN soldier and a tank and had literally just set up the satellite telephone and were radioing for help and whatever could happen and watched our car drive by us. Vroom! And saying, whoops, because now it's like 2 a.m. and we have to hitchhike off of Mount Igman in the middle of a terrible shelling raid. But in fact, we were able to hitchhike off of Mount Igman and we did get down to safety. And eventually the car, in fact, was recovered from these particular thugs. So it all ended very happily.
Is there a story that you've told that has had the biggest impact, that you feel really good about?
Well, I'd have to, again, refer back to The Key to My Neighbor's House. I was really haunted by some of the people I covered in Bosnia and Rwanda, and that's why I chose to take time off and to write the book. So the two stories I feel most strongly about are Hasan Nuhanovic, and I told his story at various points throughout the Bosnian War. Hasan is a survivor of Srebrenica, the UN safe area that was overrun by Bosnian Serb troops. 8,000 Bosnian men and boys were slaughtered. Hasan survived, but he lost his family. And a series of stories answered a lot of questions for him about sort of who had pulled the trigger and why. And that was kind of a pretty neat thing to be able to do. The second story is, again, witness JJ, this remarkable woman I met in Rwanda. After the genocide, I told her story, along with that of other women, of how they were willing to come forward and talk about their rape. Just an extraordinary set of accounts, particularly in conservative Rwanda, where women rarely talk about issues of sex, and wrote that story. And when I returned, I guess 3 or 4 years later, I found that, in fact, Witness JJ, and you notice I'm calling her Witness JJ and not by her name, had gone on to be a lead witness at the UN War Crimes Tribunal. And in fact, it's due to her testimony that rape is now considered to be an act of genocide. That is a historical first for women.
What did she say, and what was the importance of it?
You know, she went in front of the tribunal and basically looked the man in the eye who had ordered the rapes. His name was Jean-Paul Akayesu. He was the mayor of her village, of Taba. And she gave extraordinary testimony about how Akayesu, as he was discussing the women, turned to one of the Hutu Interahamwe, the sort of Hutu thugs, and said, "Never ask me again what a Tutsi woman tastes like," a reference to the fact that the women had just been raped, and then added, "You know, because tomorrow they will all be killed." It was that particular set of phrases, just, you know, the courtroom was just dead silent at the sort of gall that this man had to sort of talk about these women's rape and then basically order them to be killed the next day.
And where is he now?
Behind bars for life.
A question that's come up is, should journalists have to testify at war crimes tribunals about the information that they have? Is there information you would voluntarily give up to the war crimes tribunal because you didn't think it would hurt hurt victims and that it might help get justice?
Yeah. No, it's obviously my company's decision whether or not they want me to testify or whether or not they want me to turn information over. But there was a time when I led war crimes investigators to a mass grave. They wouldn't have found it otherwise. And I didn't see that it was any dereliction of duty. I happened to be in the neighborhood. I had just stumbled on it. It was clear that it needed to be safeguarded, that it needed to be exhumed, that it was an important piece of evidence. And so I, you know, said, "Hey, follow me, you know, we'll show you where it is." I didn't feel that that compromised me in any way as a journalist. You know, by the sheer fact of the reporting we did, a lot of the reporting we did in Bosnia, in fact, helped the War Crimes Tribunal. So I think that it's, you know, we end up often chasing the same things.
Elizabeth Newfer recorded last December. Newfer was a reporter for the Boston Globe. She was killed in a car accident Friday in Iraq while covering the aftermath of the war. She was 46. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shirok directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.